The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Go to geico.com today.
Fantasy, you're in the home 6010. Fantasy Focus.
A bonus edition of the 06010 podcast. My name is Matthew Berry. To my left, Mike Clay. Of course, all of you follow him on Twitter at MikeClayNFL. Stefania off boondoggling. Field is already looking at vacation spots in Nantucket for the summer. I don't know. They were like, we scheduled it for Monday. We're only here on Mondays. So here's what actually happened. This is a true story, Mike Clay. So I suggested we should talk about all these offseason coaching moves. Okay. Cause there've been a lot of them. There've been a lot of offseason coaching moves.
As usual.
And we had scheduled this, we did our award show yesterday. So that'd already been sort of scheduled and sort of planned out with like the TV people and the Twitter people or whatever. And the production facilities and everything like that. I'm like, well, we should do this. And next Monday, the next scheduled podcast, if you will, for the 06010, which a Field and Stefania will do. Are you doing that one as well?
I don't know. I guess we'll see. Yeah, in the 20.
He's supposed to be here every Monday other than when he can't be here. You're here every Monday.
All right. Yeah.
Right, so the apparently you're here. I'm traveling to Tampa Bay for the Fantasy Sports Trade Association conference Monday.
As is Stefania. She will also be there.
Right. She's leaving on a later flight, I believe. I'm not, because it was not scheduled for me. But anyway, so we'll see. Are you going to FSTA?
I am not this time.
Wow, okay.
I'm skipping this. I'm going to Disney a few days later. So I will be in Florida, just not at the conference. I'm doing the fun stuff.
So instead of spending time with a bunch of fellow nerds, I say fellow nerds because I don't want to castigate and say I'm like, or Joe Cool over here, but instead of spending time with a bunch of fellow nerds who are alternately doing one of two things, they either sucking up to you because they desperately want to come work for ESPN, or they're just bad-mouthing ESPN, maybe because they're jealous. So, right. It really divides into sort of two camps at these things.
Yes. Instead of that, I will be on Avatar.
Right.
And
with your wife and your kids and, Soren and, yeah, all the great stuff. You'll go to Toy Story Land, all the great stuff at the Magic Kingdom and the entire Disney theme park area. So good for you. I'm jelly, as the kids say. All right, so lots of NFL coaching moves that have happened, some of them that will affect fantasy perspective, some of them like we don't really know. Like Vic Fangio is in Denver, but he's a defensive-minded coach, so it would look like it was going to be Gary Kubiak. It's not going to be Gary Kubiak anymore. He's now going to be a consultant with the Vikings. So, and you know, there are some rumors out there about, you know, Zach Taylor to Cincinnati, Brian Flores to Miami. Mm-hmm. Those haven't been named official. So we're going to just sort of like generally kind of give you an overview, kind of a first taste, if you will, to, the ones that have been named officially and sort of a general consensus of, hey, who these guys are. Some of them are big names, but some of them you may not be that familiar with. And our thoughts about how it might affect the fantasy prospects of the offensive players on their teams. We'll go alphabetically and we'll start with Arizona, where, Cliff Kingsbury has had kind of a weird coaching, journey here. So he was offensive coordinator at Texas A&M. Johnny Manziel, he was part of that success there, with Texas A&M, goes to Texas Tech, does not have a great, ultimate record at Texas Tech. He's their head coach from 2013 to 2018. He had some big name quarterbacks with him at Texas Tech. Most notably, of course, Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, no question about it. 35-40 was his record. They didn't bring him back. And then he goes to USC to be the offensive coordinator. That lasted a month.
A cup of coffee,
and
right.
And then he gets an NFL head coaching job. You're like, he basically got fired from his
right. He got
job.
Fired from college and immediately is hired
As an NFL head coach.
I've made some jokes on Twitter. I've had a lot of people about sort of everyone sort of chasing the next Sean McVay and sort of young offensive genius. But that's the calling card of Cliff Kingsbury, is that if you are pro Cliff Kingsbury, that's the argument you're making, is that you think he has sort of these high flying offenses. And we certainly saw this when he was at Texas Tech, right? So look, Texas Tech didn't play, didn't necessarily play like Alabama's schedule. Let's be kind. Okay. So, Texas Tech had, we can debate the level of talent that Texas Tech played over the Kingsbury era, but during the stretch that he was their head coach, Texas Tech ranked second in passing yards, second in passing yards, passing touchdowns per game, second in percentage of yards that came via the pass. I mean, like, this was a team that just chucked it a lot. You know, we hear about sort of the air raid offense. They didn't play much defense, like a lot of 62-59 games here, but they threw it a ton, and obviously Patrick Mahomes is a bona fide NFL superstar.
Yeah, no question. And they, let's be honest, they brought him in to try and reinvigorate the offense here, right? They want to get back to scoring a lot of points, and we saw that with Kingsbury at Texas Tech. 42 points per game, 550 offensive yards per game, just ridiculous numbers. You mentioned the quarterbacks, Keenum, Johnny Manziel, Pat Mahomes, Baker Mayfield, Davis Webb, obviously at the collegiate
all
level.
Of them in the all of them in the NFL except for Manziel.
Yes, exactly, and obviously he was a first-round pick, so he had a lot of talent there. You mentioned the air raid offense. What you see a lot with that is a lot of four-wide sets. You'll have the tailback, the four-wide. Right. I think it'll be a little different in the NFL because you'll try to find an athletic tight end. You see more of that in the NFL. These are the best tight end athletes in the world. Of course,
Ricky Seals-Jones, baby. My Ricky Seals-Jones, finally, three years after the breakout.
I don't think it'll be him. Although he is a converted wide receiver, so maybe
he fits this. Ricky Seals, look, there are certainly flaws in his game, but he is an athletic tight end. Yes. If you're saying, like, give me an athletic tight end, Ricky Seals-Jones fits the bill. To your point, he is a converted tight end. He's a fast, big guy.
And you also have David Johnson, of course, who we know is a good pass catcher. They could split him out, too. So we're going to see some of the personnel moves they make here. It's probably going to be good for the offense. It might not be good for putting pressure on the defense, might be a part of this. But I think back to, honestly, when Bruce Arians was there, he was known, as we'll get to later, for using a lot of four wide sets.
Right.
You might see that again in this Arizona offense. And, you know, that still was only about 20% of pass plays. Whereas, like, Chan Gailey with the Bills and Jets, you saw him running about half the time. Remember, like, Quincy Anunua, how often he was on the field in four wide sets playing the slot. So you could see that, too. So I'm interested to see what kind of personnel they have. I think that'll kind of drive how they utilize these guys. But for now, if Larry Fitzgerald comes back, good for him. Christian Kirk, obviously, that should help his target share. We'll see if they add a tight end. I think they will. But again, I don't think
Chad Williams, can they develop him a little bit further?
I think they'll draft someone. Again, I think it's going to be a receiver-heavy offense. And they're going to have to go get somebody, whether it's a free agent or draft somebody early on. I think they need to inject a receiver into this offense.
I think it'll be that and more. I mean, I think I don't think one is mutually exclusive of the other. I think they could easily go out, get a free agent wide receiver, but also draft one or two guys that they want to develop. One of the things that's sort of interesting here is that, you know, Cliff Kingsbury has been, has publicly talked about his admiration for Kyler Murray, who has declared. And so, you know, there was some talk, and our own Adam Schefter, tweeted this and appeared on Get Up and other shows, talked about the fact that there's some talk. We'll see how real it is, but I can tell you that Adam just doesn't float stuff. There are some NFL insiders, not necessarily at ESPN, but there's some people that are more fast and loose with sort of the rumors they float. Schefter's not one of those guys. And so for Schefter to say, that's under consideration, that they might trade Josh Rosen and draft Kyler Murray, or that they just might draft Kyler Murray and see what happens, that doesn't come out of nowhere, is what I would say with that. So we'll sort of say, so for me, I think that's sort of interesting here is, can he develop Josh Rosen, or do they in fact, you know, draft Kyler Murray? So, because obviously I think the offense would look a lot different if Kyler Murray won or center versus Josh Rosen.
No question. And they shouldn't say, hey, we have Rosen, we're content. I mean, if he likes a quarterback in this class more, you draft him and you trade Rosen, you'll probably get a mid-late first-round pick for Rosen, you would think.
And by the way, I mean, that was one of the points that I think Schefter made, and I didn't see the whole segment. I caught a piece of it, but I tuned in late. But I think one of the points he made was the fact that they ended up not doing this. But last year, when the Browns had picks 1 and 4, there was real talk about, you know, you had Darnold and Rosen and Allen and Baker Mayfield, all guys that would go in the top, I think, 12 or 13. There was talk there of taking two quarterbacks at 1 and 4, and just seeing how it played out, whether you had competition, whether you traded one of them ultimately. You know, I think back to my Redskins, right? And everyone, like, threw up their arms and couldn't understand when they traded all that draft capital to move up to get RG3, and then they spent a fourth-round pick on Kirk Cousins. I'm like, what are you doing?
There was also this team with two decent quarterbacks. They already had Drew Brees, and they drafted some kid named Phillip Rivers, and that lasted two seasons, too. So that's such an important position. I'm with you. Even if you keep Rosen, and maybe he starts week one, you could still draft a quarterback early.
There is no player or position more premium in professional sports than a quarterback. So, if you feel if you can get yourself multiple ones, you're in a good position. It'll be interesting to see what happens with your Eagles at the quarterback position. Just speaking of a team that has two good quarterbacks.
Yeah, I think they're going to try to find a way to trade Nick Foles. We'll see if they're able to do that. Obviously, it's a mutual option there, so we'll see how that works out. But Carson Wentz, barring some shock, will be the week one starter there.
I would agree with that, but it's the fact that it's even a conversation, the fact that it's even within the realm of possibility, that even somebody is floating the idea of should they trade Wentz and keep Foles, the fact that that's not laughed out of the room is amazing that you're even at that point. I agree with you. I think it'll be Wentz, and I think they'll try to get something out of Foles, and Foles can buy his way out of it, and that's not this podcast, but it just goes to show you that when you have multiple quarterbacks, you're in the driver's seat, so I wouldn't rule out the idea of the Cardinals drafting Kyler Murray and still hanging on to Rosen. It'll be interesting to see who the quarterback is for Cliff Kingsbury, but certainly that will be a pass-first and, in theory, fantasy-friendly offense under Cliff Kingsbury. We'll see how the personnel shakes out. Now, there's a reunion of sorts in Atlanta, Mike, as Dirk Koetter, who was their coordinator for the Falcons from 2012 to 2014. He left to go be the offense coordinator in Tampa Bay in 2015 and then ultimately ended up getting elevated to their head coach. That coincided with them drafting Jameis Winston. He was replaced by Kyle Shanahan. But your thoughts on Dirk Koetter, who has had some successful offenses here, going back to Atlanta?
Yeah, at times. I mean, you look at last season, 2.9 touchdowns per game for his Buccaneers offense. But before that, five straight seasons, he was below average in scoring. So we kind of saw this big leap forward. But before that, not a lot of success. I also wonder how much can he really can he improve this Falcons offense, essentially? Right. Look at this past season. They were already the fourth pass heaviest offenses in the league. They were ninth in touchdowns. 77% of their offensive touchdowns were passes. That was fourth highest. Is there really room from a fantasy perspective to really inject more fantasy points in there, right? They're already near the top in a lot of these categories. So I wonder about that. I mean, you look back at Koetter's history. Since 2012, 73% of the touchdowns in his offenses have been passes. That's well above the 65% league average from last season. He's been kind of a neutral play caller. Jacksonville, very run heavy.
Yep.
What goes to Atlanta is very pass heavy. Then he kind of moved from run heavy to pass heavy during his seasons in Tampa Bay. So we don't have a good feel for that, but you would think based on his history with Matt Ryan, probably going to throw the ball.
Although in Thirsty Kyle, you can keep me honest here, but I believe when he was in Jacksonville, because I remember talking about this when he went to Atlanta, that it was much more a result of sort of personnel. That when he was in Jacksonville, I think they still had Maurice Jones-Drew at that time. And they didn't really have great quarterback play. So you went run heavy because you had one of the best running backs in the NFL and you didn't have anything under center. Meanwhile, you get to Atlanta and you have Matt Ryan and Julio Jones. What are you going to do? You're going to throw it. It is worth knowing that when he was with the Falcons 2012-2014, Falcons were fourth in passing yards. They had the most pass heavy offense. 67% of plays was passing over his tenure. Julio Jones had his lone double-digit touchdown season 2012. He had 10 touchdowns that year. It's the only year he's had 10. And 30% of the Falcons' drives entered the red zone, which was the sixth highest rate. Thirsty Kyle throws up on the screen and keeps me honest. Thank you, Thirsty Kyle. Maurice Jones-Drew was there for the entire time that Dirk Koetter was their offensive coordinator, 07 to 2011 in Jacksonville. So I wonder, but having said that, so I just read a lot of positive Dirk Koetter stats. Having said that, Mike, to your point, he was replaced by Kyle Shanahan. The offense certainly improved. Matt Ryan had his best year ever under Kyle Shanahan. The Falcons went to the Super Bowl, should have won under Kyle Shanahan's offense. And I think the argument, if you were going to knock Dirk Koetter, the argument you would make in terms of his Tampa Bay tenure is that their best offensive success came with Todd Monken calling the plays this past year. Look, I'm with you. I think the question becomes, with Koetter, does two things that I think will be interesting. Do they get the run game successful? Because it felt like in Tampa Bay, they never ever really established under Dirk Cutter's tenure, they never established a great run game. Now, you can look back to Maurice Jones-Drew back in the day, and certainly in Atlanta there was, but you've got Devontae Freeman coming off of an injury. You've got Tevin Coleman, who is likely to leave the team. He's a free agent. And so you've got, like, you know, Ito Smith. Like, it'll be interesting to see, can they establish a run game, and can Calvin Ridley continue to progress? I mean, that'll be the interesting thing, is Julio Jones had a monster year, and he's Julio, obviously, but with the emergence of him and another, you know, solid year from Mohamed Sanu, what does this passing game look like? Is it more balanced?
Yeah, I think it'll be relatively balanced, but kind of wide open too. So I think there's plenty of fantasy points to be had. I think really the key takeaway for me is I don't think it really moves the needle, and that's okay. Yeah. Matt Ryan was the number two scoring fantasy quarterback this past season, and he was top five in passing yards all three seasons. Cutter was there. You know, he finished QB7, QB15, and QB7. You'd like to see more than that from a obviously what we said was the pass heaviest offense in the NFL. But again, he's been even better over the last few seasons. I don't think this hurts him. I think Ryan's one of the best in the business. He obviously has a lot of talent around him. I just think it'll be one of the better scoring offenses in the NFL. Also a good O-line there.
Yeah, very, very good O-line, and there's talent. And having Ridley, we've seen Austin Hooper develop more as well. And so, you know, and Ryan, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. It will be interesting to see, though, because Atlanta's defense was so bad this year. And obviously injuries had played such a big part of that, Mike. But how much of that, you know, do you see? And it's very different situations, right? But, like, I sort of think about Kirk Cousins. And one of the arguments I made, I was further down on Kirk Cousins, and I'd still have him like 12th or something like this, but I didn't have him as a top 10 guy where he was being drafted. I think he actually might have been in the preseason hate list. But one of my anti-Kirk Cousins arguments coming into the year was, I just don't think he's going to have to get into the shootouts that he had to get into Washington, where he had such a brutal defense for so many years. And Minnesota is going to a place where he's got a very good defense, and it's going to be more run heavy. And so obviously it wasn't the kind of year that Vikings had, but I wonder if you see that with Matt Ryan. Again, he's still going to be a top 10 quarterback, but is he more back to sort of that 6, 7, 8 range than the top three guy he's been two of the last 3 years?
Yeah, I think he's probably going to end up in that like 5 to 7 range is where I would put him. The defense should be better. I mean, on paper coming into this season, the defense was pretty good, but you lose Neal and Jones right away.
Yeah, of course.
That was pretty crushing. They definitely underperformed as well, really on both sides of the ball. That's why they're making some personnel changes. So, I don't know that he's going to have a lot less pressure on him. It's still going to be the Matt Ryan show. It still should be lean towards pass heavy. And again, we don't have an answer at running back right now. We don't know what it's going to be. So Freeman comes back strong, they're going to be more able to run the football.
Right. But you got to be, if you have Freeman in Dynasty, if you're the Atlanta Falcons, you have to be a little nervous, because he had come into the season with concerns about the knees and then immediately gets injured again. And so, you know, that'll be a story that I'm sure Stefania will be tracking all season long from the many beaches around the world. All right, let's move over to Cleveland, where everything old is new again, or new is old again, whatever you want to say it. But Freddie Kitchens removes the interim tag from his title. He is the new head coach. This was a weird one to me, Mike, in the sense that I think a lot of people in the league weren't expecting him to get the job. He gets the job. And then they hire Todd Monken, who'd had so much success in Tampa Bay last year as the offense coordinator. And so people are excited, I think, you know, and I said, giddy effing up on Twitter, thinking this is very exciting. And then the news comes out in the press conference yesterday, he's not going to call plays. Mm-hmm. It'll be Freddie Kitchens. What do we make of Cleveland's situation here?
Well, I don't know if you want to change much after what we saw this past season. I mean, Cleveland offense with Freddie Kitchens as the OC, 8 games, they averaged 3.1 touchdowns per game. That was fifth. If you extrapolate that over the full season, that was fifth best in the NFL. So why would you want to change anything significantly? It seems to be working.
The stats since week 9, which is when Freddie Kitchens took over, they led the Browns led the NFL in yards per play. They tied the NFL lead in yards per pass attempt. They were chucking it deep. They were fourth in total yards per game, fourth in passing yards per game. They were 14th in points per game. They put up almost 24 points per game. So they were in the upper half of the NFL in terms of points per game. right? I mean, and they averaged over 109 rushing yards per game, which was tied for 17th, but you were a little bit more pass heavy. Defense also had, and game flow had something to do with that. But Baker Mayfield, you can throw out all the stats you want also, but to the eye test, Baker Mayfield, especially over the second half of the season, looked like a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, no one
questioned in the second half. People were like, really? You're taking like a 6 foot guy as your number one player overall. You're passing on Sam Darnold. You think he can be Drew Brees? Like one player in a million is Drew Brees. You're pointing to Russell Wilson. Like he ain't Russell Wilson. And yet now everyone's just like, Cleveland's got its quarterback for the next 15 years.
Yeah, no question. You could pick him apart a little bit, but as just compare him to rookies over the past decade, just an exceptional season. And by the way, you mentioned those 8 games with Freddie Kitchens. Here's some fantasy rankings. Mayfield, QB 10
yep.
in fantasy points. Nick Chubb, RB 6. Duke Johnson, actually RB 37, which is probably better than you think. Jarvis Landry, wide receiver 28. And then you have Antonio Callaway and Rashard Higgins. Both were in the top 46. So they were actually getting some of them secondary guys at least into the flex conversation. David Njoku, tight end 10. They did use a lot of 2 tight end sets down the stretch as well. So and a lot of targets to the running backs, believe it or not.
Yep.
Even though Duke was not a great fantasy asset, they did throw the ball to the backs quite a bit. So those are some of the trends I took away. Something to keep an eye on this offseason.
Yeah, Nick Chubb was the 6th best running back in fantasy starting in week 9, yep. to your point. He averaged 17.7 fantasy points per game, which would have been running back 8 over the season if he managed to average that for the entire year. 19.75 touches per game, 6th most in the NFL over that time frame. I had Nick Chubb as a top 10 running back. You have your initial rankings out as well?
Yes, I do. I have him up there. I was a little worried about the target distribution with Duke there and just right. the way he's been
he's
used
just
so
not
far,
involved but... in the passing game that much. Yeah.
Yeah, I have him 11th right now.
Yeah, I think I have him. Where do I find out where I have him, Kyle? Thirsty Kyle, pull up my rankings. My top 100 comes out. Keith, does it come out later today?
I hope so.
All right.
Yes.
So we'll figure it out. The rankings are in. We're having internal debates about my intro. So we'll see. we'll see if it manages to get out later today, but it'll be out Wednesday if nothing else, but hopefully later today.
Yeah,
but go ahead.
By the way, just do you want to spin to Monka now? Little
sure.
Monken influence here. Again, he's not calling the plays, but he's obviously going to have influence. He's in the building. As a potential head coach, right?
Oh, so yeah.
That's a big name they bring in. And this is another potential red flag for Nick Chubb. You look at the percentage of touchdowns that were passes by Monken's offenses over the past 3 seasons in Tampa Bay. 78%, 76%, 77%. Cleveland with Kitchens, 76%. 3/4 of the touchdowns passes. You have Duke Johnson. I mean, how much goal line work are you going to get out of Nick Chubb? It could be a lot of passing touchdowns here. That's been the trend so far for both of these coaches.
It could be. I guess my counter to that would be is I think at some point it's personnel based, right? And so there's 2 things, right? First off, the Buccaneers, again, a historically bad defense this year. I mean, they were just historically bad. So they got into a ton of shootouts. They didn't really have a great pass catching running back. They had Peyton Barber, who's fine. He's below fine. He's whatever. I was trying to be nice, but he's whatever. You know what I mean? Like, he's just like, he is, you know, you talk about a Jag, right? Just a guy. Like, Peyton Barber is like the definition of like just a guy. Mm-hmm. And he's the best they had. Ronald Jones, washed out this year. You know, they had injuries as well. And the offensive line played poorly as well. So the only way they were moving the ball was through the air, and that's where they could win, right? With Godwin and DeSean Jackson and Mike Evans and the tight ends. And so you've got a bruiser like Nick Chubb. I just don't know that you go away from him the way that they did in Tampa Bay. I also think, by the way, the Browns defense is better. It's certainly
true.
Better than Tampa Bay's was last year, and you'd think they'll improve it a little bit this offseason as well. And so, my overall ranks, I have Nick Chubb at 17 overall, but that's okay. Running back what? Which is probably running back,
like
you know,
8 or something?
Yeah, something like that would be my guess. So I'm as a late second rounder, but probably somewhere in the same range as you. I'm a little bit concerned about the lack of passing game work, but I do think the volume will be there, but it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, obviously, with Duke Johnson. Worth noting here, just since week 9, the overall target share of the team, Landry had 21%, Njoku 14%, Antonio Callaway 13%, Duke Johnson 12%, Rashard Higgins 11%. So Landry gets the most, But Baker Mayfield did a nice job of getting sort of everyone involved. And by the way, Thirsty Cow lets me know that actually I have Nick Chubb at running back 11. So you and I are right there. We are simpatico.
Yeah. Little Mar here on Monk and two. I looked at the past three seasons, right, when he was the OC in Tampa Bay. Here's where the positions ranked in fantasy points. Quarterbacks were QB6 in Tampa Bay during those three seasons. Think about all the turmoil they went through at that position, too. QB6. Last in running back fantasy points. And you talked about the personnel issues there, something to consider. Fourth at wide receiver, fourth at tight end. In fact, if you add receiver and tight end, number one in the NFL in fantasy points distributed to those two positions. Quarterbacks first in passing yards and interceptions. Think about that for Baker Mayfield, obviously. Running backs 29th in targets, last with three receiving touchdowns, also last in yards per carry at 3.6. So, again, you have to consider personnel for sure. They have an upgrade there. Monken does in terms of Chubb, but it sounds good based on what we saw from Cleveland in the second half and what Monken has done. It sounds good for Baker, and it sounds good for the pass catchers in this Browns offense.
I think it's going to be a trendy sleeper team next year. You might have been a year too early on them.
No way. I said 500 team. They went 7-8-1. Right. That's a W.
Yeah, I'm taking the W. 100% a win. They didn't get into the playoffs, but certainly came close. But I think they'll be a sleeper team in terms of for fantasy and for offense. You know what Landry is, but Njoku will be a breakout candidate. Chubb's obviously going to be highly ranked, but I think people will talk up Higgins. I really like Antonio Callaway, just from a skill set standpoint. He's a young guy that had some off the field issues, maybe a little bit immature. They dialed it back in the second half, and you saw what he could do. Without the off the field issues, he would have been a first round pick just based on talent.
Yeah, no question. This is one of those YOLO offenses, I think.
Right.
Yes. It just has that feel. We love that in fantasy, right? We love YOLO quarterbacks. We love YOLO offenses. This is one of them.
We have changes to the Jets and the Packers at their coaches. And if Todd Monken is now no longer in Tampa Bay, somebody is. So we'll talk about all those teams in a minute.
Tennessee, you're in the 06010. Fantasy focus.
Hey, Matthew.
Secret Squirrel.
Really quickly, I wanted to let you know that we have one last week to be able to have our listeners do our podcast opinion survey, where you help us out with who it is that we have as our clients that have come in and be able to do the live reads for us. We asked you guys to do a survey a little while ago as to what you thought about the show and the content. This is just as important for us. Please, we have one last week. Go to podcastopinions.com. That's podcastopinions.com. It is a quick 60-second survey. It means the world to us to help keep this show free like we like to be able to do.
So, yeah, I think you sort of butchered that a little bit. Can I clean that up?
No, you can try to clean it up, but, you know, I just take my lessons from the master,
Matthew.
Here's
what you do. You go to podcastopinions.com.
Okay,
you take a 60-second survey.
That sounds fantastic.
Literally, that's all you do.
Yep.
And what it does is we're going to take your responses. And many of you have already responded, which is great. Thousands of you, actually. But the more responses, the better that we can get. And so then we're able to make the show better. We're able to take your responses and take them to some of our partners as well. It helps keep the show free. It helps keep the show what you enjoy. And if there's stuff in the show that you don't enjoy, it'll help us get rid of that stuff. So anyway, let your voice be heard. Go to podcastopinions.com. Take a minute out of your day, for the love of God. Next time you're in the bathroom. Whatever. You know what I mean? Like, you're just killing time. You're sitting at a stoplight. Whatever. Whatever you're doing. Just when you got a minute. Podcastopinions.com.
That was better than mine. It was also twice as long. So I guess it depends as to what you're looking for. Do you want length or do you want efficiency?
I don't know. Let's ask Mrs. Squirrel that question. I mean, I'm just saying.
Sure.
My response, I will say that in my career, my life, the response has usually been length. That has been the feedback I've gotten. It's that the people that I've asked that question to have requested length.
Yeah, usually.
Listen, you know, there's a time in your life, like when you have kids, where efficiency is more important.
Sure.
But I think that overall, length is the winner there.
What are you guys talking about?
Matthew's columns.
Yeah.
Oh, his column.
Yeah. My columns.
That's what it is.
My live reads.
That's what it is.
But anyway, so length has been sort of throughout my career and pretty much every facet. Length has been sort of my calling card, not efficiency.
Yes, accurate.
All right, so let's move over to Green Bay here, where this one was a little eyebrow-raisy to me. Mike.
Eyebrow raising.
Matt LaFleur, a year after being the offensive coordinator of the Tennessee Titans, becomes the head coach of Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. So from 2010 to 2016, Matt LaFleur was a quarterback coach. Okay, so Notre Dame, the Redskins, the Falcons. My Redskins, by the way, had a ridiculous staff. I tweeted this out. Somebody, I don't know if you saw this, but at one point on the same staff, they had Matt LaFleur, Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, and I'm blanking.
Was Mike the coach at that point? Mike Shanahan.
Mike Shanahan was the coach. Kyle Shanahan was the offensive coordinator. So that, and then they had
LaFleur, McVay,
LaFleur, McVay, and Kyle. And Kyle. Yeah, so. Kyle LaFleur, McVay, and Mike was the head coach. So, pretty good staff as that goes. Anyway, so he was a quarterback's coach from 2010 to 2016. He was the Rams offense coordinator in 2017. He was the Titans offense coordinator in 2018. And the reason I say this is weird is that it's hard to know how much work he did with the quarterbacks in terms of Notre Dame, Redskins, and the Falcons, right? I mean, how much are you going to teach Matt Ryan?
Plus, don't forget, before even Mike Shanahan, in 2008, 2009, he was under Gary Kubiak.
Right.
So, I mean, this is all over the place. So many different coaches, so many different levels, positions.
Like, if you're going to, there is something to be said for the fact that Sean McVay, when he left Washington and was forming his staff in Los Angeles, tapped Matt LaFleur to come over there and be his guy in 2017. Although he wasn't the offense coordinator in 2017, I think he was the quarterbacks coach.
The Rams?
Yeah,
no, he was the OC, but he didn't call plays. It was McVay's show. He was technically.
Oh,
the OC.
You know what? That's right. Greg Olson was the quarterbacks coach. I was getting them confused. Greg Olson, who's now the offense coordinator in Oakland. Sorry, I got them mixed up. You're correct. LaFleur was the OC. Greg Olson was the quarterback's coach. Olson's now the, and he was, Olson was the OC. And
that's why people wondered why he made a quote unquote, lateral move to Tennessee, but he got to call plays for Tennessee. It was a big change.
So, I mean, but that's the thing, right? So he was the offense coordinator with the Rams and obviously had tremendous success, but how much influence did he have over Sean McVay, who called the plays and is widely considered and rightfully so an offensive genius? So then he goes to Tennessee, where he was the offense coordinator, and I don't think anyone thought that the Titans offense was anything particularly special this year. They were 26th in points per game. They were 29th in passing yards per game. Now they were 7th in rushing yards per game. So that was a positive, but how much of that, Mike, is a function of, you had Marcus Mariota, who ain't Aaron Rodgers, which, by the way, might be the nicest thing that's been said about Marcus Mariota this year. I mean, like, he had a tough year. He's had a tough NFL career, honestly, where he's had flashes of things where you see, like, oh, there's a franchise guy in there, but there's been long stretches of poor quarterback play. Some of that's been hampered by injury. But still, like, I don't know that you saw anything out of the Tennessee offense this year where you said, that's the guy I want in charge of Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, we don't know for sure if he's going to be good at this job or not. We just don't know. We haven't seen it yet, but we can try to look at some trends here. We saw a pretty balanced offense when he was with McVay with the Rams. We saw a very run-heavy offense last year, but was that Mike Vrabel? Did he come
right in,
bring in Deion Lewis, say, you know, we're going to use these two backs, we're going to run the football, we have Marcus Mariota? It's very possible. So
right.
We don't know
or
which
personnel,
way
by the way. Right. Vrabel could have said, like, I want to run the ball with Henry and Lewis, and I'm going to play good defense, and that's how we're going to try to win these games, because we don't think Mariota can really air it out, or that we don't really feel confident in our weapons outside of Corey Davis in the passing game. And remember, they also lose Delanie Walker, right? So they lose a big piece of their passing game as well. And so maybe you adjust when that happens.
Right. So we don't know that for sure, but they were run heavy, no question. Both seasons as OC the past 2 years, very the touchdowns lean towards the running backs. You saw a lot of running at the goal line. Todd Gurley, obviously, Derrick Henry this past season.
To your point, they were 4th in rush percentage. They were 2nd in red zone rush percentage.
There you go.
Under Matt LaFleur.
Yeah. So the thing that jumped out to me is, yeah, Todd Gurley, obviously exceptional. He had a great fantasy season 2 years ago under LaFleur as the OC. This past season, it started slow. Again, maybe they were like, we're bringing in Deion Lewis. He's going to be our lead guy. He was. It didn't work out. But when they turned to Derrick Henry, he turned into a fantasy stud as well. So could that be good news for Aaron Jones? That's my question. You see Gurley, you see Henry. Could Aaron Jones be the next man up under LaFleur? So far, so good, at least with the running backs in his offense.
Well, look, I mean, you know, like, I was talking about free Aaron Jones since last summer. So, you know, there's not a bigger Aaron Jones fan than I am. And so I took this as good news for Aaron Jones. And I also, by the way, I thought one of the reasons Mike McCarthy got fired was his refusal to use Aaron Jones, which, and I don't, you know, I mean, like, there was talk about they liked Jamal Williams in pass protection. Then you watch the games, you're like, Aaron Jones is just as good, if not better, than Jamal Williams in pass protection. And you would see Aaron Rodgers dropping hints to the media about trying to get Aaron Jones more involved. So I never understood sort of the stubbornness there with Mike McCarthy on his running backs. But I do think that that has to be a piece of it, that you're a new head coach. You need Aaron Rodgers on your side, because I got news for you. If they have to choose, like, they can get another coach. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't get another, like, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time that just sort of fell in your lap. And I honestly think this is one of those moves, was to try to get the most out of Aaron Rodgers while he's still in his prime. And so they believe he's the guy to do that. It'll be interesting to see. Does it change your rank on Aaron Rodgers? We to your point, we don't know. We could sit here and speculate all we want about whether Matt LaFleur's offensive play calling was due to personnel or tendencies, how much influence did McVay and Vrabel have, et cetera, et cetera. He didn't really get to call play. He didn't call plays in Los Angeles, but he was part of the offensive game plan. So, but does that change your rank on Aaron Rodgers?
No. I have him QB3. Yeah. I'm still waiting a quarterback other than, you know, we've had the Mahomes debate already. Where do you take him? After
right,
him,
yeah.
After him, but I'm waiting a
you
while.
You and I disagree on sort of Mahomes on the overall.
Yes,
but you
still
and I
QB
both,
one.
We
still
both
QB
have one. Him as the number one quarterback off the board.
Yeah, so I'm not moving the needle much. It looks like Kyle's pulling up my 192. I have him at 72.
Right.
At QB3, that's about where the quarterback should start coming off the board other than Mahomes. That I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah. I think I probably have him a little bit higher in my my overall ranks. Are you going to mine, Kyle? Is that
you
what
love your quarterbacks?
I do. Well, it's not necessarily that. I honestly, we had this debate on television as well. I'm trying to rank less for, and maybe I should. Maybe this is a philosophy thing, and they'll probably
come
down a little bit.
You have to tell people where to take them.
Yeah, this is fair.
But you're
it's
right.
Fair.
You do try to have to walk that line, right?
Right, because it's like, I just think we can sit here and say, like, Pat Mahomes should go in the fifth round, and there's not a league in America that isn't a, quote, expert league. Where there isn't a league, a regular league in America where Mahomes gets out of the second round. I just don't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're right.
I mean,
it's just sort of like, okay, if you're going to draft Patrick Mahomes, where in the second round am I drafting him? You know, I have him towards the end of the second round, right now. But anyway, I currently have Rodgers at 65 overall as QB3. I have him behind Mahomes and Andrew Luck. So we're not too far off there. We're probably just, and we're not even that far off of Mahomes. I have him inside my top 20, but just barely. You have him as a fourth rounder?
39, yeah.
So we're 19 picks apart?
Yeah.
Something like, yeah, we're like, yeah.
Yeah, just like a quick aside, you just have to make your decision on Mahomes. You just have to decide if you want to take, if you think he's going to do what he did this past season, take him at the end of the first round. If you're right. More looking at league history shows it's very hard to repeat. It's very hard to be at the level he's at. You're probably going to just pass on him, essentially. So you have to decide, am I going early? Am I taking him? Or am I just going to pass and wait a quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, I think the argument is, and you and I know you and I will be debating this all summer long and, you know, probably for 24 hours straight on the marathon. I guess my counter to that would be is that Mahomes performed at such a high level. I mean, literally the greatest fantasy quarterback season of all time. Better than Peyton Manning in 2013. Mm-hmm. Better than Brady's 50-touchdown season. The greatest fantasy quarterback season of all time. The Patrick Mahomes could come back to the mean a decent amount and still be the number one quarterback by a wide mile.
He could regress.
I understand.
You mentioned Peyton. You mentioned Brady. Those guys, they were up 70, 80, 90 points on the number two quarterback, and none of them were the number one quarterback the next season. They all came back to it. So I'm looking. Maybe he breaks the mold. You know, the last guy to be a back-to-back QB1 was Dante Culpepper in 2004. It was. You know, maybe he can do that. But I think even if he comes down, you know, he could still be QB1. He could drop 50 points off what he had this season, still be QB1. But
exactly.
Is that enough to be a first-round pick? No,
I'm not a second-round pick. Right.
Maybe.
I'm not advocating him as a first-round pick. I do think towards the end of the second round, because I think he's that kind of special. I think Andy Reid's that kind of thing. And the other thing is that I think that's interesting about Mahomes, and we'll move off of Mahomes and move over to the New York Jets.
Yeah, what are we talking about
here? I know, but Mahomes is a lot more fun to talk about. But, 62 fantasy points over the second-best quarterback in fantasy this season, Patrick Mahomes. Just so much better. Again, the best fantasy season of all time, ever. One of the handful of players to get over 400 fantasy points. And he did it in his first year. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, first full season. I mean, his first year as a starter is what I meant. You know, I mean, he had one game as a rookie in week 17, but his first year as a starter. His first year, I mean, and so he obviously learned things, you know, and so my expectation is that, I mean, you know, Peyton Manning had that season, his first year in Denver, but, you know, he'd been in the league for a number of years. Same with Tom Brady. Like, for Patrick Mahomes to do that in his first year as a starter, in 16 of his first 17 games ever, like, come on.
Yep.
I hear you. We both agree he's a special player.
No question about it. He's still my QB1, even though, again, we haven't seen a repeat in 15 years. He still deserves that top spot.
So there you go. Let's move over to something not nearly as exciting as Patrick
Nathaniel
Mahomes.
Nathaniel Hackett, right?
Yeah. The New York Jets, actually. I mean, I guess we can mention Nathaniel Hackett, who's being hired by the Packers as a consultant.
He'll be the OC, not the play caller. Yeah.
That's what I meant. Yes. He will be the offense coordinator, but not the play caller. So, in essence, a consultant.
Yeah, the only thing I'll say about him is you look back at his history so far. He was at the Bills and the Jags. Didn't have a lot of success, but here's his quarterbacks at minimum 50 snaps. These are his quarterbacks. Blake Bortles, EJ Manuel, Kyle Orton, Thad Lewis, Jeff Toole. That's who he's worked with. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, a little better.
I know, I like those meetings like, you know, blah, blah. I think we should do this. Well, you know, actually, you know what really worked well for Blake? I don't see Hackett sort of piping up with that.
So we don't know how good he really is. He obviously got fired this year by Jacksonville, but he has not had even an average quarterback yet.
You know? Right. So it'll be interesting to see, like, and honestly, LaFleur hasn't had a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers either. I mean, I guess with the Falcons, you know, we had Matt Ryan, but
Goff, if you count him, but not quite Rodgers.
Yeah. Goff, not Aaron Rodgers. And when he got there, Goff was a reclamation project.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, you know, and so he turned into a provocative fantasy quarterback. And that's one of the arguments for, you know, how much credit goes to McVay versus, LaFleur versus Greg Olson, who was the quarterback's coach and then parlayed that into being the coordinator of the Raiders. So anyway, all interesting to see, but at the end of the day, you trust in Aaron Rodgers, you trust in Davante Adams. We think this might mean good things for Aaron Jones. We'll see how the rest of it plays out if Randall Cobb comes back, and which one of those, whether it's MVS, whether it's St. Brown, which one of those rookie wide receivers sort of steps up? Is there one just that you sort of like dynasty-wise?
I lean towards Valdez-Scantling just because he's the guy that jumped out in the offseason, but they were back and forth. You know, one week it was St. Brown, then it was Valdez-Scantling. So, but remember, these were all mid to late round picks. They could still go out and it's a new coaching staff. They could go out and say, you know what? We need this guy in round two. We need an impact guy opposite Davante Adams. Maybe now with the coaching change, they bring back Randall Cobb. You just don't know.
Yep.
We'll have to see. Depends who they like and what the scheme's going to look like.
Maybe they'll bring back Jordy.
Maybe. Well, no, he signed a few year deal, right, in Oakland. So
yeah,
he'll be there. And by the way, free agency at receiver, at least right now, not.
Oh,
so
it's ugly.
It's ugly.
You saw the Quincy Enunwa got a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how ugly it is.
Yeah. That deal was interesting. So, and then they changed coaches too.
Right.
So who knows, but at least Gase, as we'll get to, likes, wide receivers.
That
was all planned.
Yes.
That was all planned.
So, yeah, Jordy signed through this upcoming season. Thirsty Kyle throws up on the screen right there, although he could certainly be a candidate for release. You know, who knows what Oakland is doing. So let's move over to the New York Jets. You mentioned Adam Gase here. This was a weird one. This was a,
so was his presser yesterday.
His press conference was as well. He was sort of monotone and obviously a lot of memes in terms of his eyes, but let's just focus on him as a head coach, where you can argue that, you know, it's hard to make a case for Gase. Like, he didn't have a lot of talent there, but part of that job was, I mean, Ryan Tannehill was a top 10 pick overall. Like, I mean, you know, I think he went 10th overall. Is certainly top 13. Ryan Tannehill was certainly the first round pick of the Miami Dolphins when he went. He was supposed to be a franchise quarterback, and that was one of the reasons he was brought in, was to develop Tannehill because of, in theory, his success with Peyton Manning, his success with Jay Cutler in Chicago. Your thoughts on this Adam Gase hire?
Yeah, there's a lot here to unpack, especially if you look at his seasons with the Dolphins. Three of his past four offenses, very run heavy. So that's something to consider as he goes to the Jets here. His past four offenses, all around or well below average in touchdowns. So he wasn't scoring a lot of points with these offenses. Below average in snaps, that's kind of one of the knocks on him. and something to think about in fantasy. They just don't run a lot of offensive plays, so we have to consider that as well. Doesn't throw to the running backs too often, at least before this past season. Always below average in targets to the tight ends. And remember, they drafted Mike Gesicki this year. They had Julius Thomas, did not utilize him. He prefers wide receivers. And in fact, you look at three plus wide receivers.
I think everyone was excited about what Julius Thomas did in Denver under him. And it was like, oh, and like for years.
No Peyton Manning in Miami.
Yeah, I know. For years, fantasy managers chased the tight end under Adam Gase. And I was one of those that advocated it, you know, a couple of those years, and just it's never worked out.
Yeah, and he does like three plus wide receiver sets. He's ranked fourth, second, and fourth during his three seasons in Miami. So that's something to think about with Anunua, who we just mentioned, and Robbie Anderson and whoever else they bring in there at wide receiver. 83% of their offensive touchdowns have been passes over the past two seasons as well. So, you know, it seems like it leans towards the wide receiver position so far, and that's reflected by fantasy production. Look at the fantasy points scored by position during his three seasons as a head coach. Quarterback, 27th. That was mostly Tannehill and Jay Cutler. Running backs, 28th. Wide receivers, 10th. That actually stands out. Tight ends, 31st. So I thought that was interesting. A little bit more detail here. Running backs, this really jumped out to me. This is one of the, as I did some research here, this really popped out to me. Running backs under Gase as head coach, 4.5 yards per carry. That's third best in the NFL. 2.03 after contact. That's first in the NFL. But he was 27th in carries by running backs. He did not run the ball, but had a lot of success from the running back position. You think Kenyon Drake, how we all, except for you, pound the table for more Kenyon Drake. He had efficiency. We saw it from Frank Gore. We even saw it from your boy, Balazs, this year.
Caleb Balazs,
efficiency. Did not run the ball. Tight end position, dead last with 219 targets as a head coach. Dead last with 23 carries inside the five during his three seasons there. They did not run the ball near the goal line. Again, that number, 23 carries inside the five. Next closest team at 39. The most in the NFL, 82, was the Patriots. So, listen, I don't think Le'Veon Bell's listening. I doubt it. Maybe Daniel can check on that. I don't think he's listening.
Yeah.
But that would be a red flag for me if I was Le'Veon Bell thinking about going here to a team. And obviously, we've all connected that dot. It makes kind of sense. But does it make sense with Adam Gase? They don't run it at the goal line. He's not made good usage in terms of volume for his running backs.
I mean,
there's red flags.
You have to assume that if they go out and the only reason Le'Veon Bell goes there is if they pay him a boatload of money. And if you pay somebody a boatload of money, you're going to want to use him. But to your point about this, you know, two things about Gase. First off, a super slow team. In Miami from 2016 to 2018, and it's worth noting, Doa Loggins, their offense coordinator, the Jets' new offense coordinator, was the Dolphins' offense coordinator in 2018 as well. So sort of.
He may be. That's not for sure, but there seems to be leaning
that's,
that way. That,
yeah. That's. The expectation is, yes, good point. But the Dolphins, last in the NFL in pace of play, 25th in red zone efficiency, 24th in rushing yards, to your point about sort of lack of running. And then the other piece of that here is that in each of Adam Gase's last 6 years, three with Miami, one with Chicago as a coordinator, two with Denver, multiple running backs had 100-plus carries. In all six of his years of calling plays, multiple running backs had 100-plus carries, multiple running backs with at least 120 carries in four of those six seasons. This is a guy that likes the running back by committee. Some of those years it was because of injury to various running backs. Some of it was because of sort of, you know, I mean, think about like sort of like, you know, him, Jay Ajayi, didn't see eye to eye, and they got rid of him at one point in the season. So it just if they don't sign Le'Veon Bell, I think this doesn't bode well. I think we're going to see another committee for Crowell, McGuire, you know, whoever ends up being their running backs this year, right? Bilal Powell, if he's still there. So all those guys there. The only thing that's sort of interesting here, and then I want to move on to our last coach in Tampa Bay. The only last thing that's sort of interesting to me is you think about all the success that Jarvis Landry had under Adam Gase. And then think about last year where Danny Amendola was actually useful. Does Quincy Enunwa, who just signed a big deal and has played a decent amount of his snaps out of the slot, suddenly become an interesting sleeper next year?
No question, especially when they made that long-term commitment to him. And as I just mentioned, Gase has been good to receivers, nothing else.
Right.
But he likes his receivers. He loves three wide sets. You know Enunwa's going to play a big role. So as of right now, he's probably going to be the favorite for slot duties. But we have to see who that three is, because this year, once Jermaine Kearse
came
healthy,
back, right,
he was the slot. But again, the way they ran that offense, they had two guys inside a lot. But I think, you know, again, Robbie Anderson, probably Kenny Stills' role, that could be bad. You know, that could be bad. I think it really just comes down to if Sam Darnold can save the day here. If he's the real deal and he can run a high efficient, high scoring offense, he's going to be the guy, not really Gase, that drives the fantasy production from these guys. So I think I'm still buying on this offense. I think with Anderson, Chris Herndon is a nice sleeper. Yep. Darnold, I think this is an offense you could look to in the late rounds. But again, I still think they need one more wide receiver. We'll see who that guy is.
You had lost me until you said late rounds. I'm with you on late rounds. I mean, I'm just not an Adam Gase fan. I'm just not an Adam Gase fan. And so, but yes, if you're saying hey, here's a place for some late round sleepers, that I buy.
Yeah.
It's not an offense that I would target initially, just because I think it'll be a low volume, slow pace of play offense that will have multiple running backs and, and you're gonna hope that, yes, that Darnold develops.
Yeah, it's all value, but I think this is one of the offenses just focusing away from Gase and on the Jets. An offense that could take a leap because Darnold is really good. Remember, he's about 2 years younger than Baker Mayfield, and that last month or so, he looked good. So I'm more interested in this offense because of Darnold. I don't think Gase is an offense that injects a lot to it. You know, I don't think, I agree with you on that front. Yeah. I don't think Gase is a big push forward for this offense, but Darnold could be.
Let's move over to, I think for me, possibly the most exciting fantasy hire, which is Bruce Arians returning to the NFL as the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. He's bringing the gang back together. So Byron Leftwich, who was with him in Arizona, is now his offensive coordinator. Todd Bowles, who was his defensive coordinator in Arizona before he left to become head coach of the Jets, is going to be his defensive coordinator. He's getting the gang back together. Leftwich is going to call plays, but he's from the Arians tree and obviously with influence from Bruce Arians. We know Bruce Arians loves to throw it deep. Feels like to me this was a perfect coach for Jameis Winston.
I think in terms of scheme, absolutely. Yep. It's not much different than what he's done. You know, they used a lot of wide receivers this past season, obviously. They made pretty good use of them. They scored a lot. But, I mean, I think I'm a little pessimistic about Arians. Remember, he kind of got driven out of Pittsburgh. And other than that two seasons with Palmer, he hasn't had a lot of success. In fact, he's been average or below average 8 of his past 10 seasons as a head coach or offensive coordinator. He just really spiked with Carson Palmer during those two seasons. And, you know, I guess I'm a little bit more pessimistic. As mentioned earlier on in the podcast, he loves 4 wide sets that could be very good for the depth receivers in this Buccaneers offense. We'll see who they are. DeSean Jackson reportedly wants out. He's under contract. Adam Humphries is a free agent. You still have Mike Evans, still have Chris Godwin. I like it for them.
Sure.
I think they'll be heavily utilized regardless of the coach.
And he's never had a tight end like O.J. Howard.
Yeah, that's another thing. I was going to mention that. I mean, you look at the fantasy points scored. I've done this a few times throughout the podcast. Scored during Arians' era in Arizona. Quarterbacks 21st, running backs 14th, tight ends 31st, wide receivers 5th. But his tight ends, Jermaine Gresham, Daniel Fells, I think it might have been Darren Fells, Rob Hausler, John Carlson, Jim Dray, Troy Nicholas. Yeah. But they did that kind of intentionally too, right? They went for blocking tight ends, and Howard can block. Mm-hmm. This might be an issue where he only gets to, 4 or 5 targets a game. You know, they just don't. Other coaches might say, "Wow, he might get 7, 8, 9 targets a game." That could be a red flag. But like you kind of alluded to, he's the best tight end we just named. You know,
you would think
he'll find a way to utilize him. We'll see on Cam Brate if they even bring him back, but. I do think it is good for the receivers. I'll say that.
I think it's good. I think it's good for Jameis Winston. I mean, you know, I think the Arizona stats, remember one of those years under Arians, Palmer tore his ACL. Like that, that was the Ryan Lindley season.
That was the next year. That was not one of those 2 years. Yeah.
Right.
But
when you quote numbers under Arians in Arizona, you have to include, that 1 year, right?
Sure. Well, some of that was Pittsburgh, though, with Big Ben, and they just were not really lighting it up as good as Ben was.
Fair. I mean, not everyone gets along with Ben. It'll be interesting to see. Here's what I do know, and I don't think I'm going out on a limb by saying this. Bruce Arians loves to chuck it deep. When he was the head coach with the Cardinals 2013-2017, they were 2nd air yards per pass attempt, right? They had a league-high 25% of their passes thrown that traveled over 15 yards. 7th in percentage of yards that came via the pass, including a league high 71% of red zone yards. They threw often, they threw when they got in close. And so you think about Jameis Winston, who is one of the best deep ball throwers in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Listen, there are flaws to his game and a little bit of YOLO, and he's a little bit too careless and he throws too many into too many tight windows, and he's a turnover machine. I get all that. But this is a guy that likes to chuck it in his 9 starts last season, Jameis Winston averaged 4.6 deep completions, 11.1 deep pass attempts per game. Both would have led the NFL if he qualified. He only played 9 games again. Just to give you a comparison here for, I know you know this, Mike, but for everyone listening at home, Patrick Mahomes led the NFL with 4.2 deep completions per game, right? And again, Winston averaged 4.6. And Baker Mayfield led the NFL with 8.8 deep attempts per game. Again, Winston had 11.1. So again, like, this is a quarterback that is comfortable throwing deep. Mm-hmm. And so if you're taking Cutter and Monken away from Winston, I think if you have Jameis Winston in a dynasty league the way I do, this is about the best you could have hoped for to replace those guys in terms of fantasy production. I'm going to be bullish on the Tampa Bay passing offense once again going into next year.
Yeah, you mentioned it should just be another YOLO offense, and Bruce Arians basically said as much. Like, right. he's not gonna be all over Winston for interceptions, right? They want to score points. That's probably bad for their win total,
right?
But it's good for fantasy, and they do have some talent in the front 7 defensively. They could take a step forward defensively and fix up the game script issue they had this season, but they still do have to
Bowles is a good defensive coordinator.
Yeah, but
I think
personnel.
It's a good defense. They do need personnel.
Is so underrated. I don't know. We focus so much on scheme and yeah. They need personnel in the secondary. For sure.
There's no question. That is a big area of emphasis for them. I would suspect that's where they'll focus in terms of free agency and the draft as well. Be interesting to see what happens with the run game here. You know, do they try to improve? Do they try to make something out of Ronald Jones? Because, you know, there ain't no David Johnson, at least as it seems, on the roster at the moment.
I was thinking Le'Veon Bell could actually be a really good fit here.
Oh.
Especially after what he did with David Johnson. So that's a name to keep an eye on. And I've heard that connection before, so it would not surprise me at all if he went there. By the way, one more thing quickly on the tight ends. The one I did not mention was Heath Miller.
Right,
who he had in Pittsburgh. He had 2 top 8s from 2007 to 11 with Arians. Otherwise, was outside the top 15 all 3 seasons. So when he's had that two-way tight end that played every down, still not a ton of fantasy success. So I'm a little less optimistic about Howard than I was before this change. But anyway, I could see that.
Without any numbers in front of me, I feel like Heath Miller's production was very driven by touchdowns. You know, he was a guy that, like, he wasn't ever a big yardage guy. Again, that's off the top of my head, so maybe I'm wrong. Feel free to correct me, Thirsty Cal, if I'm wrong. But I feel like when Heath Miller was a fantasy asset, it was driven largely by touchdowns, and because that Heath Miller was good in the red zone, and there was a connection there between him and Big Ben.
And even if that's true, I mean, the volume was not there then. To
right,
really
correct.
Because he wasn't getting a lot of fantasy.
Oh, production. Yeah,
that's
yeah,
the,
yeah.
That's the concern, really.
Thirsty Kyle throwing up here on the screen, only 1 season with over 800 receiving yards for Heath Miller.
To be fair, they didn't start keeping track of touchdowns until afterwards. Why are we talking about Heath Miller?
Thanks for listening to the show.
Yeah, no problem, guys.
Producer.
No big deal.
Anyway, so we'll get more into all this as it goes on. I have to sort of believe that they don't have a guy like O.J. Howard, and Winston throughout his career has shown a propensity to throw it to the tight end in the end zone or the red area when you're looking at whether it's Cameron Brait or O.J. Howard, last year when he was healthy. Mm-hmm. So again, and also by the way, the bar to be a productive fantasy tight end, not particularly high.
Fair point. Yeah, he could score 6 touchdowns and not get 800 yards and be top 10. So.
Exactly.
Yeah, I do like Howard as a talent a lot. I loved him this year. Yep. He was looking good till he got injured, but nonetheless, great for the wide receivers here. I mean, I would say Chris Godwin's a guy you got to get next season, but he's going to be on every sleeper list. We're all going to rank him too high, maybe top 25, right? We're all going to love Chris Godwin, but we'll keep an eye on, too, if they bring back Deshaun, who could kind of play that John Brown, J.J. Nelson sort of role
right.
in Arians' offense. We'll see how that all plays out and if Adam Humphries is back. But Chris Godwin will be a super hot sleeper next season for sure.
There is no doubt about that. Fields, Stefania, and maybe Mike Clay?
I'll be there.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. We're just supposed to get a big snowstorm this weekend.
Right,
so
yeah.
We'll see how that affects everything. But we will have a podcast on Monday looking back at the playoff games that took place. Got a couple of great playoff games coming up.
Oh, my God. So excited. You know what I'm excited about? In addition to just watching both those games, is that there's no bad Super Bowl. Whatever happens, yeah. There's literally no bad Super Bowl that comes out of these 4 games. I'll be honest, like when the Eagles jumped out to that 14-0 lead, and I know you're an Eagles fan, Mike, but I was like, oh man, are we gonna have a Patriots Eagles Super Bowl again? I don't want that.
I do.
Yeah, and I'm sure you do, of course. But you know, I'm excited to whether it's the Rams or the Saints representing the NFC, that's gonna be awesome. And whether it's Mahomes or Tom Brady, like no matter what happens, it is going to be an awesome Super Bowl. So some great football left to see. So be sure to check that out as well. We'll have off-season pods throughout the year after the combine, after free agency, after our ranking summit, after the NFL draft, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, my thank you to you, Mike Clay. Good job.
Thank you.
Check out your 192, your 2019 192, the 192 players that should be drafted in 2019. That's available on ESPN.com. Of course, we'll all follow you on Twitter at Mike Clay NFL. My top 100 for 2019. I'm not as ambitious as you. I just did a top 100 for 2019 for right now with an open yet to be determined if I get it through the desk here. That'll be out soon. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, pretty much all forms of social media at Matthew Berry TMR, except for the Fantasy Life app where I'm merely at Matthew Berry. That's also probably the easiest way to get a hold of me. All right. For Secret Squirrel, Thirsty Kyle, Not Cool Keith, and Mike Clay, I am Matthew Berry. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you later. Peace out.
You're in the 06010. Never gonna hustle, in case you didn't know. Matthew Berry, TMR.
You guys, go ahead, give me grief for being on SportsCenter for 45 seconds.
You think you could do better than me? Because I don't think you could.
Jail bait, Phil Yates.
You're terrible at hashtag improv.
At Phil Yates. At Phil Yates.
Stefania Bell.
Oh, don't let Berry convert you.
Secret Squirrel Daniel Dodd.
Make it happen.
Mediocre.